This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Hey everybody, this is Richard Deitch and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. This week's podcast, I really enjoyed. Two guests this week, two terrific guests. Megan McPeak is a play-by-play broadcaster for the Capital City Go-Go. That is the G League affiliate for the Washington Wizards. In October 2018, Megan became the first female play-by-play broadcaster in 30 years to call an NBA game. That was the Wizards against the Pistons. Megan McPeak also calls the Washington Mystics for Monumental Sports and Entertainment. She was also the first female play-by-play broadcaster in the National Basketball League of Canada. She is joined by Tiffany Green, who is a play-by-play commentator for ESPN. She covers a multitude of sports for that network, including basketball, football, softball, and volleyball. Tiffany Green is the first African-American woman to serve as a play-by-play commentator for college football on a major network. And I absolutely enjoyed talking to Megan and Tiffany, who are true pioneers when it comes to women of color calling games. And that's the key here. They are play-by-play broadcasters. And what they are doing now, I think, is going to be incredible for those that are coming behind them. And I think this is a conversation about many, many different things that you're going to enjoy. So coming up, Megan McPeak and Tiffany Green. All right, as I stated in the intro, very excited to have these two guests on the Sports Media Podcast. We'll give a little bit of bio to start. Megan McPeak is a play-by-play broadcaster for the Capital City Go-Go. That is the G League affiliate for the Washington Wizards. In October 2018, she became the first female play-by-play broadcaster in 30 years to call an NBA game, calling the Wizards and Pistons during the preseason. For Monumental Sports Network, among other firsts for Megan, she was the first female play-by-play broadcaster in the National Basketball League of Canada. Tiffany Green is a play-by-play commentator for ESPN. She covers a multitude of sports for that network, including basketball, football, softball, and volleyball. In terms of being first, Tiffany Green is the first African-American woman to serve as a play-by-play commentator for college football on a major network. I've obviously interviewed many people on this podcast, but it is very rare for me to talk to people who are pioneering in their field, and that is what Megan McPeak and Tiffany Green are. Megan and Tiffany, welcome to the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm delighted to be here. I need that intro all the time, by the way.
I think I need to walk around with Richard just introducing me to every single room I walk into.
and let me say this: that's $10 from each of you every time it's used on your in your world. So I can collect some money of this as well. We'll all make some money on our interest. Tiffany, I will start with you, and it'll be the same question for you, Megan. But we'll start with you, Tiffany. Why do you love doing play by play?
I think just being able to be the voice carrying the broadcast and knowing that, you know, when you have that moment to have that, what could be a legendary call or that game-winning moment, you want to be that soundtrack for that game, for that sport, for those two teams. I like being in control in my personal life, and that carries over into my professional life as well. So it's just nice to kind of guide through. And I also believe in not being, I like to be a team player, right? So I like to play my role really well, but I enjoy sitting next to individuals who have played the game, who have coached the game, and just setting them up, so that, you know, I can help them shine in any way possible. So I'm glad to play my role.
Okay, Megan, for you, same exact question. Why do you love doing play-by-play?
Funny enough, it's, you know, piggybacking off what Tiffany said, I too like to have control in my life. and it carries over, like Tiffany, to my professional side of things too. And I think for me, it comes back to being a former point guard, and being able to control the floor, and now being the point guard in the broadcast, being able to deliver and set up my broadcast partner, and as well tell the story the way the cameras are showing the story through the lens coming across the television set to viewers. I like telling that story, and being able to be part of what the players are telling the story as well too on the floor. So just being able to do that is an absolute blast.
Megan, I'm going to stick with you. How, if I have not heard your play-by-play as a viewer or listener, how would you describe your play-by-play style?
Probably different than most people would be used to, because I played. I would typically be sitting alongside Tiffany doing a game as a former player, and originally that is what I actually wanted to get into. I wanted to, funny enough, I wanted to be the Canadian Doris Burke. And I originally did start out that way. While I was playing in college, I would be the analyst for the men's game after my game. So I have that experience of being able to analyze it and break it down. So I include that in the way I call games. And I'll do the traditional, you know, call and set up my partner. And then once they're done their thought, if I have something to add, or if I saw something different than what they saw, I may add that as well too. So I wear not only the play-by-play hat when I call games, but I also kind of give my own opinion and my own analysis because I have the playing experience, and my producers have empowered me to give my experience and what I'm seeing. So that's kind of the way I call games, and it's allowed me to be successful to this point in my career, and I hope it continues to allow me to be successful.
I love that, the Canadian Doris Burke. Might have to steal that down the road. Same for you, Tiffany. How would you, if someone has not heard your game call, how would you describe your play-by-play style?
Youthful, fun, informative. I'm a mother, so I probably come with some references there, but pop culture as well. So I'm listening to a lot of what the kids are listening to these days. And if I see something that's nice and someone's silky down the lane and they came through dripping, drip, drip, like, let's use it. I want you to feel like you're having a good time and you're talking with your homegirl. And I think before, when I started out, I was trying to kind of be straight-laced and just kind of down the middle. And I feel like I've departed from that over the last several years because I was just like, my husband would tell me, he's just like, just be you. And everyone enjoyed the interaction personally, but I didn't always carry that over in a broadcast. And then finally I gave myself permission to just call a game the way that I would want to hear it or how I would talk about it with my friends. And to me, that's what helps to separate me.
Tiffany and Megan, I'm going to get to your professional journeys in a second. I want you to actually go as long as you wish, but I want to get to this now. At the top in the intro, I mentioned that there's a lot of firsts with both of you, Tiffany. For you, first African-American woman to serve as a play-by-play commentator for college football on a major network. And I wonder if, do you, Tiffany, because you are the first of something, do you feel pressure in that there's nobody who is sort of before you, at least in terms of being an African American woman doing what you have done in major college football?
I would be lying if I said I didn't. Of course I do. I feel like a lot of eyes are on me, and perhaps, you know, I think maybe some people are looking in with more pride, but it's the pressure that I put on myself to try to make them proud and to try to walk in these shoes knowing that I am the first. And, you know, I watched women like Robin Roberts, you know, growing up, and I know she did play-by-play more so for basketball, but, I mean, she was, to me, courageous. She was smooth. She's, you know, so good at what she does. And I was just like, okay, like, I'm just trying to breathe a scent of her air, you know? Like, I'm just trying to be a portion of that. And so I know that in my first season of calling football, I was nervous as hell. Woo! Because I felt like so many eyes were on me and everything that I said, and was I going to be, you know, criticized, or, you know, a microscope was going to be on me if I said this or that. And what I found was after just about every game, whether it was through email or social media or running into people, it was, you know, so proud of you. Like, wow, like, just thank you for what you're doing. Like, this means a lot. Like, keep it up. And I think that helped me to, you know, change my focus from the pressure that I put on myself to, you know, walking, and I don't believe in pride too much, but proudly standing in those shoes as the first.
Megan, can you relate to what Tiffany said? And if so, how?
I most definitely can. You know, for me, it's interesting because when you see me, people automatically just assume I am a woman of color, which I am, but I'm actually an interracial woman of color. So I'm mixed race. So when Tiffany talks about, you know, the pressure, I 100% can understand where she's coming from. And I don't know, you know, I don't want to speak for her, but I feel like she may agree with me on this point that being a woman in this business is hard enough because you have the pressure and you feel the pressure of being a woman and having to be perfect every single call. But then you add in the fact that we're also women of color. It almost makes it seem like our margin of error is even more narrow. And it's funny, and I'll be honest, I don't know, Tiffany, if you remember this, but I actually emailed Tiffany in 2015 to connect with her and get advice, being a woman that does play-by-play, but also being a woman of color that does it. And she was gracious enough to converse with me. And so for this moment for me is kind of coming full circle that a woman I looked up to, I was able to connect with and get life advice and career advice from. And I'm now able to be alongside her doing this podcast with you, Richard. So thank you for this. and, you know, it's crazy because I think we put all the pressure on ourselves and we're putting the pressure more so than what society and what others may put on us. Because, and this has been something that I have had to learn, and have struggled with, is that there are younger generation, both at this point, men and women, looking up to me and what I do and Tiffany and what she does. And that is scary for me, knowing that someone is looking at me as a role model and I'm just trying to live my life and do a job that I love and do it at the best of my ability. And that's kind of scary, but it's become a good scary for me.
That's really well said, Megan. Tiffany, I follow up on that.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, thank you as well. And of course, Megan, I remember it was LaChyna Robinson who put us, I think, in contact with one another, and we shared emails back and forth and some phone calls as well. And so, shout out to you and what you're doing. And I'm excited to watch your growth, because it's just like, you know, there are a lot of people who reach out and say, oh, I want to do this. And, you know, I have a passion for this. How do I get there? But very rarely do you see it kind of follow through to this point. And so that to me speaks to the type of person that Megan is, that yes, she had talent, but she had that stick-to-itiveness as well to get to this point. And it's nice that, you know, I can look to someone else that looks, you know, similar to me as a woman of color,
for her doing her thing, because that's what you want to see, that it continues to grow and we continue to open doors. But the pressure piece of it, it's kind of like, I look at it on Sunday mornings when you get ready to go to church, you know, my mom would dress us in our Sunday best. And whatever you do, you better not mess it up. You know, like, you got to have the nice frilly socks and the pretty shoes, the bows in the hair. Whatever you do, don't mess up. Don't mess up the outfit. Don't run around too much. Don't drop any food on it, because you just have to kind of be perfect. And that's really how I felt coming in. It's like, geez, I have to be perfect. But you understand that you're human, and you have to kind of drown out, or at least I've had to drown out just what I'm perceiving, or how much I allow the outside influences to affect me. And so it's nice now to kind of have that shift, where you hear athletes talk about this all the time. And Megan, I'm sure you've had this, where you just don't let the moment get too big for you, right? You just be wherever your feet are and do the absolute best, knowing that your preparation, you should be able to stand behind that. And so just learning from athletes and coaches and the games that I call, to just not let any moment get too big. And, you know, I am believing to a degree that we are carrying, you know, a generation with us and helping them to come up. But, you know, every call doesn't, you don't hang on to that every call. Like, you don't put the pressure on that. It's up to you this moment, this time, right now, because it's not. You know, kind of drive yourself crazy with that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy Priceline.
Tiffany, I want to stick with you, and I think listeners will be interested in your professional journey, how you ultimately landed at the job you did. So let's start in college, where you went to college, and then take us from there to how you ultimately ended up working for ESPN.
Yeah, proud graduate of Florida A&M University, fourth generation, so it was in my blood. And I started out as a part-time production assistant with a startup station here in Tampa. I had applied for a bigger job, but clearly my college experience wasn't going to be enough. And then I took a one-man band position in Savannah, Georgia, and that was my first on-air experience. But for the first 3 months, I was a photographer, right? So a live, certified live truck operator. I was, you know, shooting stories for other reporters, just hoping and waiting for my chance. And so I spent about 3.5 years there, general assignment reporter. So I felt like I paid my dues through the, local side of things. Then was able to move to Orlando, Florida, work with News 13. They then opened up an arm, 24-hour sports network called Bright House Sports Network. And it was there that I really felt like I began to fly. My career began to blossom because I got to do so much more. First of all, I was covering sports. Hallelujah. I had been waiting for that moment for nearly a decade. And then I did play-by-play, sideline. I could produce, I could host and anchor literally anything that they needed me to do. I felt like I'd learned to be versatile enough to be able to do those things, and kind of started knocking at the door of ESPN with the relationship that I had tried to build over time and through the National Association of Black Journalists and going to their annual conventions. And they had the ESPN Wide World of Sports there. I started doing like small tournaments, AAU basketball tournaments, softball classics, you name it, Pop Warner football championships, and then was able to do a little bit more for ESPN3 for college football sideline. I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to make it. Like, this is it. This is like 13 years in the making. Like, let's go. But
it was actually Fox Sports One and a former executive there who saw my work at an NABJ conference and gave me the opportunity to do play-by-play for their inaugural women's basketball package for the Big East. And there I got my big step, my bright lights and big stage, and continued to grow from there. And in 2015, ESPN brought me on full-time to be able to call basketball, volleyball, softball, and just added football a couple seasons ago.
That's awesome. Who was the Fox executive who gave you that shot?
Roy Hamilton. Shout out to Roy Hamilton, and thank you. And there are many who believed in me, but he was the one who let me do it on a national stage.
Yeah, ultimately, it's great for people to believe in you, but it's really great if the people who believe in you actually have the ability to give you the assignment. Megan, you're going to have a different background, of course, because you played college basketball. So you my guess is that that may have led to some different areas than others who, you know, traditionally went without playing college athletics and broadcasting. So what's your journey from college to what you're doing today?
So for me, I actually, when I was in college, I wanted to be a strength and conditioning coach and do that at the NBA and WNBA level. So I didn't start out in broadcasting right away. It wasn't until, you know, just school wasn't always my thing, and the fitness program I was in could be a strength and conditioning coach. It just wasn't working for me. And my athletic director made a decision based on the fact that I didn't shut up and said I was going to go into radio. I had two choices that I was sort of mulling between and couldn't really decide. And time was of the essence when it came to entering the application process for the programs. And in his office, the summer of 2006-07, he looked me dead in my eyes and said, "You don't shut up. You're going into radio." And I will forever be grateful to Doug Fox for making that decision for me. I had one of the best broadcasting programs in the country. And part of that was getting on-air reps right off the bat in the program versus having to just, you know, fake it and record it and then get critiqued on it. And part of that was that we broadcasted the men's and women's basketball and volleyball games, home games. And as I said earlier, I would play, and then thankfully my coach, Denise Perrier, would have a quick post game chat, and I would shower really quickly, grab my notes, and then go and be the analyst for the men's game. And upon graduation in 2009, I, you know, was working retail like most college grads, and trying to figure out how I was going to get my first gig in the business and what I was going to do. And a friend slash coworker actually got an alumni email from the university she went to in my hometown, which is McMaster University, and they were looking for broadcasters for their radio station for their men's and women's basketball games. And she forwarded me the contact, and I reached out to him, who ended up being Jamie Tenant at CFMU. And I told him, like, "Hey, I didn't graduate from here, but I would still love to come in for an audition. I'm not sure if that matters to you." And he said it didn't, brought me in for an audition. And after a couple weeks, he let me know that I was going to join the broadcast. There was four of us that did it. And I started out as an analyst for the women's games. And a couple weeks into the season, for us doing the games, the gentleman who did the play-by-play, Dr. Don, he unfortunately fell ill. So Jamie asked if I could fill in at play-by-play. And subsequently, unfortunately, Dr. Don passed away. And it was the shift that was unfortunate that happened, but for my career was a fortunate movement that happened because I fell in love with play-by-play after three games, and I have not looked back. It then led me to the National Basketball League of Canada and making history with that league. It then led me to making connections with some amazing people that work at MLSE and cover the Toronto Raptors, and Dwayne Watson, who became a very good friend and mentor to me, gave me the heads up that they were going to be going after the hopes of bringing in a G League team, then the Development League team, to Toronto and to the Raptors, and let me know who I should speak to and that he thought I should go after it and see what they think. And I reached out to Aaron LaFontaine, who was the decision maker and the person in charge at NBA TV Canada, and met with him, had my interviews, a grueling, long process, as Tiffany, I can imagine, can attest to the interview process being very stressful. and I was offered the role as the first voice of the Raptors 905 in the NBA G League in the summertime. But the kicker is that they wanted to wait until all the broadcast information was going to be released, which, as we all know, happens around, you know, September. So I was given permission to tell my immediate family, but I couldn't tell anybody else. I had to keep it a secret, and it was one of the hardest secrets I've ever had to keep. And, you know, being able to see a team go from the ground up, and in their second season go on a run that was absolutely phenomenal, which was capped off with a G League title, then a D League title, and seeing Pascal Siakam, being named the finals MVP, and then to see where he is now, is a time that I'm forever going to be grateful for. And then being able to learn from one of the greatest players to play the game in Jerry Stackhouse, as a head coach, and learn from him. Learn from the assistant coaches like AJ Diggs, who's now with the New Orleans Pelicans alongside a WNBA great in Teresa Weatherspoon. Learn from a guy who's with the Charlotte Hornets and part of Canada Basketball and Nathaniel Mitchell, and the coaching staff that they have had with the 905. That then allowed me to do some radio and whatnot at TSN, with doing pre and post game for the Toronto Raptors and covering an entire season of NBA coverage, which ultimately led me to being in Washington, D.C. right now. A chance run-in in the back of house at the now Scotiabank Arena. To me, it will always be known as the Air Canada Centre, much like the Sky Dome, which will always be known as the Sky Dome to me, is known as the Rogers Centre, into a former Raptor and former Wizard and retired pro player in Pops Mensah-Bonsu, who is now the GM at the Go-Go. And, you know, running into him led to a relationship that allowed me to, you know, pick his brain about being a professional scout and working in player personnel and understand why teams go after certain players that fit their system versus going after the best talent in, you know, a draft. Because that's always something I've pondered. Why do teams not take the best guy on the board versus taking the best guy that suits their system? And I think the Spurs are one of the best teams in pro sports to attest to why they do that. So to understand that from him, and then, you know, fast forward now, oh gosh, I think it was two summer leagues ago, after learning to walk again after having an Achilles rupture. I had just began walking like 3 weeks prior to summer league, and I was rocking a wicked cane that my dad lent me in Las Vegas, and I ran into Pucks again. And he kind of let me know secretly that he was the new GM for the Capital City Go-Go. It hadn't been announced at the time yet. And I kind of made a joke, but as we all know, every joke has a bit of truth to it. And I just kind of like said to him, like, hey, if you guys are looking for a broadcaster on the play-by-play side of things, like, let me know. I can send you my stuff if you don't already have it. And he looked me dead in my eye and said, here's, you've got my email. In case you don't, here's my card again. Send it to me and I'll pass it on and they can take it from there. Who knows if they have anybody? I don't know if they do. Fast forward, you know, later on in the summertime, heading into fall, I am in Washington, D.C., having a interview with my now bosses in Carrington Simons, Caitlin Mangum, and Zach Leonsis. And, you know, just with all the experiences that I've had and the advice that I've given from people like Tiffany, like LaChina, Leo Routens, Paul Jones, Matt Devlin, and, you know, there's many people I could name. But as you guys can tell from what my athletic director, Doug Fox, says, I like to talk. So I won't bore you with the list of names, but just the amount of people that have had my back since day one, and have empowered me and encouraged me to keep fighting for my dream. I went into that interview with the most confidence that I've ever had, in my life. And that includes my playing career. And I went in it with the mindset that this is my job to lose and nobody else is to take from me. And I am now in my second season with the Go-Go, and I had the absolute honor to call one of the most historic WNBA seasons in history that was capped off with the WNBA title for the Washington Mystics.
I appreciate those the two journeys there. That's really interesting.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Tiffany, I want to get back to you. Megan, obviously you can you can answer this as well. You know, one of the things about any profession, but I think it really, for the media for sure, it's a big part of it is, you know, you need people to emulate. If you see someone who looks like you or reminds you of you in a position that you would like to be part of, there's something to reach for. I'm a white male. There's a million of me in the sports media. So it wasn't very hard to sort of see people who looked like me doing what I did. And subconsciously, it has to be sort of float into somebody's sort of ecosystem when you're young to think, okay, that's something I can do. So Tiffany, for you, and I know you mentioned Robin Roberts, the fact is there were not many women of color in the sports media in, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s. You know, Pam Oliver, obviously, who's been on my podcast a number of times, is someone who I think a lot of probably women of color could see on television and see that possibility exists. You mentioned Robin Roberts before, but I wonder for you, like, was it Robin, and what was it like to not have many of those people in front of you where clearly for others, there's a million of those people? Well, I didn't really ask the best question, but I think you know where I'm going here.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I said I wanted to play in the NFL. I wanted to be the first woman in the NFL. I thought I could be the first woman in the NBA, but I really was setting my sights on the NFL until my parents crushed that dream pretty quickly. I had a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform. I was ready, like, shoot it and boot it. However, I think you just imagine yourself in the shoes of a Pat Summerall, right? Or an Al Michaels. And I tried to copy what they were doing. You know, I tried to do it in their voice and their tone and talking, you know, my ear so I can hear it, just so I could have some form of practice. But who really made me feel like it was possible was honestly Pam Oliver. For as much as I love Robin Roberts and saw her and just thought she was like the greatest and still do, it was Pam Oliver because I saw her at least on sidelines. So she at least made it to the football game and was on the broadcast and did a phenomenal job. And it was really cool, too, that, yeah, we're both FAMU graduates, but I got a chance to meet her in college. So I was like, okay, not only do I see you on TV and have I seen you, you know, growing up, now I get to, like, touch you, ask you questions, like, fawn in your presence. This was one of those really cool meetups. And that, to me, helped to foster that idea, like, no, like, it's legit. I can do it. I was always kind of different, perhaps different from what my mom had for me in her mind. So I kind of always believed that, you know, I could buck the system or I could walk in my on my own path and be totally cool with that. Like, none of my friends were really, like, loving sports like I was loving sports or video games or putting Big League Chew and fruit roll-ups in their mouth and practicing batting stances for the Chicago Cubs, which was my favorite team. Like, my friends weren't doing that, and I was okay with being different in that regard because I had, like, this burning desire in me to do something different. And I think also what helped me was my father, right? So my father was in television well before I was born or could actually see him, and then he moved over to radio. But he, too, was a first. And his encouragement just along the way, like, okay, so you're a young African-American woman. That's great. Go get the interview. go set up this story. Write a letter to the editor if you have a feeling about, you know, the offense or defense that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers should run if you're 10 years old. Give your opinion. Get involved. And so there were a lot of different forces that helped kind of shape and form me into who I am today. But I think I just saw myself, I just had this goal ahead of me. And I was just like we all are in a sense in how we are being successful and getting the story or, you know, doing our jobs, whatever it takes to get it done. Like, I'm just trying to get it done. And thankfully, now, even though I talk about Pam and Robin Roberts, I can also speak to now saying that people like Megan or Maria Taylor or LaChyna Robinson or Jemele Hill, Beth Mowins, now it's cool because there are many women and women of color for young people to choose from and to look at and say, okay, I kind of want to be like her. Now, do I feel like there needs to be more? Absolutely. But at least I feel like we've gotten to a greater start, and I'm glad to be a part of that wave.
Pam Oliver's first job, agriculture reporter, WALB-TV in Albany, Georgia. Albany, Georgia. That's right. Megan, now you grew up in Canada, so some of my listeners might not know if there was if there were broadcasters for you, who you sort of felt like you can touch and be like. But I am curious if there were similar people for you the way they were for Tiffany.
Yeah. So, I think for me, it's like you said, Richard, growing up in Canada, it's completely different. Even like today, the broadcast rights are very different. And unless you have access to getting ESPN or TNT, not so legal in Canada, we didn't see anybody. It was only when the national games would be on Canadian television. So I grew up on Jerry Howarth, who was the longtime voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. I grew up on Chuck Swirsky, who was the longtime voice of the Raptors. And Matt Devlin, Paul Jones. For me, being in Canada, it was all males, which is very interesting. And, you know, I'm kind of jealous in a way, or envious of today's generation, because you now have things like NBA League Pass, where you can see the different faces and genders of people covering sports leagues. And for me, the NBA, where when I was growing up, that didn't exist. And like I said earlier, I wanted to be the Canadian Doris Burke, because that was the only woman that we really saw touching the NBA and covering the NBA. So that was all I knew. I unfortunately didn't get to see the time when Hannah Storm was covering the NBA as closely as she was. I only knew her as the Hannah Storm that was on SportsCenter and whatnot. And same with, you know, Robin Roberts. It wasn't until she was anchoring SportsCenter and stuff like that that I saw Robin Roberts. So I was in a different position than, you know, than Tiffany and today's generation, where you have access to all these faces. So for me, it was waiting until those national games come on, when I got to see Doris. And just, you know, the way that she had, and she still today garners the respect. And I would say this about Pam Oliver and Lisa Salters as well, because those are probably, in my opinion, at least, for whatever that's worth, three women that can walk into a men's locker room and everyone stops, because they have the utmost respect for them and the way that they cover the game, whether it's basketball or football. And I look at a woman like Doris, who, for whatever reason, and I will never understand this, is scrutinized night in and night out by society, because she may not be the person that they want to look at on TV. But when you can walk into a room and people like Adam Silver, the late David Stern, LeBron James, Greg Popovich, Mike Krzyzewski, the late, and this is crazy that I have to even say this now, the late Kobe Bryant, will pick your brain about the game of basketball. I hope that I can have a type of career that I can have a quarter of the respect that the players and coaches around the game of basketball, both men's and women, show to a woman like Doris Burke. And for me, that's why I always wanted to be the Canadian Doris Burke.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Tiffany, in your observation and experience, how much racism or sexism or inequality exists today in the sports media?
I'm thinking about that one because I remember like my first season of calling college football. It was before I got the HBCU package and we were just trying things out. And I went to a school in Alabama and I think the crew was shocked to know that I was the play-by-play announcer and not someone who was it was just the commentary, like, who, what? There was a lack of respect immediately when I walked up, or, you know, they kind of just didn't want to work with me. And I don't know if that was because I was a woman or because I was a woman of color, or they just didn't know me. I don't know what it was, but I was just like, oh, that didn't feel good. Like, you know, everybody kind of comes on to a crew and yeah, you see some new faces, but hey, how's it going? And you kind of put on the facade, and they did not there. But for the most part,
I would say that I certainly feel it subtly. I had an experience most recently with a coach, and I was asking about a player and her status because she seemed to be healthy when we were watching her practice but had not played in the last couple of games. And I said, well, can you tell me about her? And he was like, oh, she's a bitch. She's a bitch. And I was like, wait a minute, bruh, I just met you, okay? I don't know you. We don't know each other like that. I felt it highly inappropriate that he even referred to his player in that way. But then she was also an African-American student athlete. And so I think sometimes it comes directly at you, and sometimes, you know, you're tested with situations where it's like, well, how are you going to react? Or how are you going to respond to those situations? So I try to, in my best way, address it, but I try to also I try to not let it get to me when I have experienced it, or people have made, like, you know, little snide remarks about, you know, what do you know about this, or, you know, why are you here? Because if you do, then you'll kind of become consumed with it, and it'll throw you off track. Well, at least I could say for myself, you know, kind of throw me off track a little bit. I mean, it's there, it's real. And while I hope it will get better, it hasn't gone away yet, that being racism and inequality and discrimination. So, you know, you just try to operate within it and focus on what it is that you can control and check those things where you feel like it comes at you incorrectly.
I'm sorry you've had to deal with that bullshit, but I do appreciate you you sharing that story with me. Megan, the same question for you, and that's in terms of just how much racism or how much inequality based on race or sexism from your observation exists today in the sports media.
I would agree with Tiffany that it does still exist, and I, as of right now, and I really hope that I'm wrong and proven wrong down the road, but for some reason part of me always believes that there will always be a piece of racism and sexism in the sports world, which is really disappointing to have to say that or to even be thinking that I can say that. But if past behavior is an indicator of future behavior, it doesn't seem like it'll change. And like you, Richard, I'm terribly sorry that Tiffany, you've had to experience things like that. For myself, it's more so come from social media. And a social media standpoint, there was an incident when I was back with the 905 in Toronto. It was just a chance interaction that went left on Twitter. And luckily the team security and team personnel had my back on how to handle it and what to do, and it was taken care of. And that situation was sad because it's social media and people like to hide behind monitors. So based on the person's profile picture, I can only go off of that. And the sad thing about that interaction was that it was a man of color, if it was the person who it was in the picture. Unless that person stole the picture, I don't know. But I can only go based off of the picture and the profile, which was a man of color, which was very jarring that I was verbally attacked by someone in our own community. I haven't experienced anything since then, luckily. But hearing stories like the one Tiffany just told us, and stories from other people, I at least am equipped mentally on how to react and handle it. And I'd like to think that the way my parents raised me, and the person that I am would allow me to react properly in a situation if I was to ever experience it. And, you know, people like to think that in Canada that racism and sexism doesn't exist. And for me, it's interesting when I hear that now living in the U.S. And the climate, especially being in sports, it's so interesting. And, you know, I might catch flack for this, but I don't really care because I know that it's happened. It's been evident on social media. I've had people tell me, I've had friends tell me. And I like to say that, you know, racism, sexism does happen in Canada, that, you know, Canadians have this persona that we're polite, and we're not mean. So for me, I like to just tell people like, yeah, it's there. We're just more passive aggressive and sneaky about it, which is really sad to say as a Canadian. But it's true. There is racism, there is sexism, in Canada. And, you know, outside of that one incident, I'm thankful that I haven't had to experience it more. And my heart breaks for people that do and are experiencing it because it's unfair and it shouldn't happen. And like I said, I hope that sometime down the road, I can be proven wrong, that there is no longer racism and sexism in the world of sports, or just quite frankly in the world at all.
Tiffany, what's been your social media experience like? I know you're on Twitter. I don't know if you're on Facebook or Instagram, but what's it been like for you?
Yeah. So in order for me to try to stay out of fray, I kind of use it delicately. Like, I am on Twitter, I am on Facebook and Instagram. I just opened up my Instagram within the last like year, and I actually am not a heavy social media user. I know that it's a part of the process for what we do. But I don't actually like it all that much sometimes. And so I attempt to kind of stay away from it, because naturally I have now been conditioned to pick up my phone and check for my messages or emails. And I will then go on to social media. And quite honestly, I don't want to welcome in any of that negativity. And I don't actually want to buy into too much of the, you know, oh, you're doing great. So I actually am probably old school in the social media realm. I kind of try to stay away a little bit.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
All right, a couple more for you guys. I'll go back to you, Megan. And Tiffany, I certainly want you to answer this as well, because Megan, in fact, reached out to you. But Megan, how often do you hear from women of color who are interested in getting into sports broadcasting?
You know, it's kind of sad. I don't really hear from them that often. And I don't know if that is because I do play-by-play, and maybe they're not interested in play-by-play. They might be interested in hosting or being an analyst or doing sidelines. Maybe it's because I primarily cover basketball, and they might not be interested in that sport. I can probably count in the last 3 years on, I'll say both hands, how many women of color who might be, you know, fresh into the sports market or are in college and university right now that have reached out to me for advice. And that's kind of disappointing. And I don't know if it's me. I don't know if it's them. I don't know if you know, there are just not as many women of color that are wanting to get into sports broadcasting. And that's why I don't know what the reason may be, but, I haven't had many reach out to me, which is kind of disappointing, I guess you could say.
Tiffany, I'm going to guess that's a little different for you. One, I think you're a little bit older than Megan, and two, again, just sort of anecdotally, from talking to Pam, and I imagine Maria Taylor, because she's become very high profile, gets a lot of this. I'm hoping that that's, obviously what Megan's saying is a bummer, but my sense is that it might be different for you, especially because you're at ESPN, you're a little more visible there. Am I correct or am I incorrect?
Yeah, no, I would say that you're correct in that. And Megan, don't worry, we're going to change that. Because we'll continue to start funneling more young, aspiring women and women of color towards you. Because I would say on a weekly basis, I could count. I need more hands and toes to count the number of, both young women and men who are interested in getting into the business, particularly of color. And I think that is perhaps, based on who I'm with in ESPN, but also I like to be involved and remain involved with my J school back at FAMU, community organizations here, my sorority, Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, the Lynx Incorporated, and they all have, some form of youth groups. And what happens is based on, I am one of those stories from Tampa who's kind of like a hometown success story. So many people have seen me grow up, and my parents laid an excellent foundation for me, and they too remain involved in the community. And so they ask my parents to say, hey, can we reach out to Tiffany, or have this, daughter or niece or cousin or this young lady that goes to my church, and they all funnel, their inquiries to me. So I've had a little bit different of an experience, and I'm thankful for that. And then when I go out and do, HBCU football, that's another kind of untapped market where that is an uncommon space. And for, to have that interaction, to have been an HBCU grad and a woman in the space of sports, a lot of people are requesting, hey, can I reach out? Will you look at my reel or, my resume? So I go through resumes and reels or phone calls or email for projects as, women of color. That they're doing in school. I go through that on a pretty consistent basis weekly, I would say.
All right. Well, that's good to hear, actually.
It is.
Yeah. Don't worry, Megan. I'm telling you.
I would agree. I think, Monumental Sports Entertainment is great, but I think because it is such a new OTT platform and people don't see it as much unless you're in the DMV area. I would understand if it's because Tiffany has status at ESPN and that type of connection, that it wouldn't surprise me if that's why people reach out to her more than they would me. And I'm not offended by that in any way. I'm just glad that people are reaching out to someone.
Exactly. Yeah, it's coming, Megan. Don't worry. You got a lot of time in this business.
Yeah, don't you worry.
All right, two more here. We'll start with you, Megan. What is your favorite moment so far that you've called as a play-by-play broadcaster, and why?
That is a tough one. Wow. I think I've got like two, but it's not an exact moment. But I would say probably the two championship seasons that I've called. Just being able to witness that from start to finish. And I'm going to give the recency bias to the Mystics because, losing in the finals the year before and then having the determination to get right back there but finish it the way they wanted to was absolutely insane. But I think out of that is probably the fact that I got to call the first ever 50-40-90 for Elena Deladon, which added her to a list of eight other players. And her being the only female on that list, it was insane to watch her do that in a season with a broken nose and then to find out that she continued to do it with some herniated discs in the finals. But yeah, I would say that regular season and just start to finish what Coach Tebow and his staff did with that team and what those women did on the floor from game one through the finals, and being able to be the voice of that narrative, because, you know, selfishly, along with Ryan Rucco, my voice is going to be attached to that for history when it comes to the Mystics and that franchise and the history when it comes to Elena Deladon and getting her first 50-40-90 season. And I'm going to be forever grateful for that because I don't know if I'll be able to ever experience that again.
What about you, Tiffany?
I'm so happy you were able to go first on that one. So I could sit here and try to roll through and think about what I've enjoyed. And I'm so bad with, like, the best or the number one. But I would say the Florida Classics over the last 2 years. And even though, you know, FAMU has come out on the wrong end of things, it's still such a personal game for me because I grew up attending the Florida Classic when it was here in Tampa, and then when it moved to Orlando, there's such a big build-up and lead-up. So the coaches' luncheons before on that Friday, and then the game itself, where we added Black College Live, which is something I do with my partner Jay Walker on social and YouTube, and just trying to get over that hump. Every time I've called, well, the last two times that I've called that game, it's ended in heartbreak, but I felt like I left everything out there. Like I just gave it my all. Now, I was crushed both times, but I think it was great because it challenged me as a broadcaster, right? Like, yes, you have to be impartial and you want to put your, you know, homerish ways aside. And, but I just felt like I gave everything that I could give in those games. And to me, that was incredibly satisfying. I would say an honorable mention, if I can, just the experience from the Women's College World Series, right? So being out there in Oklahoma City, experience that entire atmosphere, that was the, you know, that's the biggest event that I've ever done. And so being able to step in as a dayside reporter was awesome, but then also getting a chance to show even more of my personality on our Seven Innings podcast live show that was alongside the actual championship series broadcast was so fun. So the fact that I got to go on television and eat wings and that I could get out and sing Shiny from Lana and that be like totally okay was also just one of those enjoyable times as a broadcaster.
Nice. All right, let's finish on this. Megan, where do you hope to be professionally in 10 years from now?
I hope to be the successor to Mike Breen and the voice of the NBA Finals.
Go big or go home, basically. That's good. Hit up Doris Burke for, you know, maybe in terms of talking to ESPN ABC on that. What about you, Tiffany? 10 years from now, what professionally, where do you hope to be?
I would love to be calling an NFL package weekly. I want to be there.
Well, listen, to you both, this was really, really great. Incredibly interesting and informative for me. As we close here, let me give the bio again, since I got props from you both.
Okay.
The last time.
Wait,
Megan
can
McPeak.
We add some music, like a bed of music underneath there? Like,
Tiffany, this ain't ESPN. This is a low-budget operation. Music. What are you talking about? Megan McPeak is a play-by-play broadcaster for the Capital City Go-Go's, the G League affiliate for the Washington Wizards in 2018. I'm sorry, in October of 2018, and I should mention Calls the Wizard, the Calls the Mystics, too. In October 2018, she became the first female play-by-play broadcaster in 30 years to call an NBA game, calling the Wizards and the Pistons for the Monumental Sports Network. She's the first female play-by-play broadcaster in the National Basketball League of Canada, and if you listen to this podcast, obviously you've sort of gotten, I think, to know her and her thoughts and goals much better. Tiffany Green is a play-by-play commentator for ESPN, does a number of sports for the worldwide leader, including basketball, football, softball, and volleyball. She is the first African-American woman to serve as a play-by-play commentator for college football on a major network. Megan and Tiffany, I took a little bit of time to sort of get this set up, but I cannot thank you enough for making time to do this. I know you both have busy schedules, and but I think a lot of people are going to find this really interesting. So thank you so much today for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast, and nothing but the best of success to you both.
Thank you, Richard. Really appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Thank you, Richard. I greatly appreciate it, and thank you for allowing me to have a platform to say thank you, Tiffany.
All right, back in the studio. I hope you enjoyed that. I thought Megan and Tiffany were incredibly honest, and it was really just a terrific interview, and hopefully the people listening got something out of that. And like I've said throughout that interview, they're just two pioneers when it comes to sports broadcasting. If you like this kind of topic, or if you like this kind of conversation, I should say, head to the Sports Media with Richard Deitch page and leave us a 5-star review. Give us a written review as well. All that stuff is just immeasurably helpful. And go down into the archives and see what you like, whether it's covering Kobe Bryant with Howard Beck and Tim Kawakami. We had the producer of and director of the Super Bowl, Richie Zions and Rich Russo, sort of explaining how that works in terms of putting on that kind of major production. Jalen Rose, Adam Amin, Jim Ross, now the voice of AEW. And, just go down the list again. This podcast at this point has interviewed many, many people that you either see on television or hear on audio or read digitally or in print. And so hopefully you'll find something you like. My thanks again to Patrick Antonetti. Thank you to everybody at Cadence 13 for supporting this podcast, Chris Corcoran, Spencer Brown, Sean Cherry, and John McDermott. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Media Podcast.